Welcome to the Bitcoin Nova. Today I'm here with Satoshi Skywalker. We are going to discuss all different things about Bitcoin. We are just going to have a casual kind of conversation about any thoughts we've been having lately, things that maybe people don't talk much about that we want to bring some attention and bring some light to. I want to mention the communities that he's part of. I also want to discuss identity and how we like to, as Bitcoiners, especially on X, where it's our main platform for sharing our ideas, just talk about how people like to stay anonymous. And why, and what's the dilemma there. So we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. I'm really excited for you joining us, and we're going to get right into it. So do you want me to call you Skywalker or Satoshi Skywalker?
You know what? Yeah, Skywalker works. Okay. I kind of landed on the whole Jedi image, you know, being a fan of Star Wars ever since I was young. Mm-hmm. And I kind of saw some parallels between, you know, the journey of learning more about Bitcoin and becoming a master in it and the journey mm-hmm. that like a Jedi goes through. Mm-hmm. Plus, I don't know, you know, I've been on Twitter/X since like 2009. I've had a lot of different accounts over the years. And when you're creating something, it's fun to like pick a character and stay with it. And I saw a lot of that happening in Bitcoin, and nobody was using Jedi imagery. So I was like, that's going to be my niche. That's where I'm gonna
love
fit it.
And so. I love that you have a golden lightsaber, you know, with the laser eyes.
Yeah. So Grok was really helpful with that. I kind of just I love the laser eyes too. Like if you're a Bitcoiner on Twitter and you don't have laser eyes in your profile picture, what are you doing? Like you gotta get with it, because laser eyes till fiat dies, right? That's what they say.
Yes, so. That's the saying. I love it. It's really great. And I do feel like I had a profile picture for a while that I didn't have laser eyes on. And then I was like, what was I? Because I feel like, oh, it's such a cool photo. Do I want to add that? I'm like, yeah, I want to add that. Of course I want to add laser eyes. I think the reason I didn't have it was because I didn't have a good program, actually. And I was always seeing everyone else's photos that had very cool laser eyes. And I tried doing these editing apps that I use for photography, and it was always just like these like lens flares that I was trying to use, and they just didn't look the same. And I was like, mine looks lame. I'm not going to do it. So once I started talking to more of the community, and I actually had people responding to my comments, and I wasn't just alone out there on X anymore. I actually said, somebody mentioned, why don't you have laser eyes in your picture? And I'm like, I need a good laser. What do you guys use to do it? I don't know. So somebody sent me an app, and I don't know what it is right now, but I have it saved. I could always link it below. But I used it and I got awesome laser eyes. So I think a lot of people that don't have them maybe just don't have the right tool to get their laser eyes yet. So I think it's a necessity.
You got to be in the know. Mm-hmm. Very excited to be here. Very excited to talk Bitcoin. This is my first ever podcast I've been a part of.
No way. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of one of the goals I had when I started this account. I saw all these podcasts coming up. I'm like, I would love to be on one. I've been on radio before. I had a show in college, and I always just like talking to people. And we've done those spaces, obviously. The Strategic Maxi Alliance group, we've had a couple Twitter spaces, and those have been really fun. I've gotten a lot of good feedback from people on those. They have a lot of fun in them. We don't do them enough. I think everyone's just real busy, but good. Like, people need to be actually talking to each other, not just tweeting each other back and forth. We need to be sitting down and having discussions and looking to the future and talking about problems. And that's how we're going to move forward with adoption here.
Yeah. I think that, that's why I'm so happy to, you know, have this podcast and have somebody like you who hasn't yet been on one, who has, you told me you have radio experience, and, hearing you talk in spaces has been great, because it's like you know, it's a lot easier to talk than it is to tweet it. You know, it's like you can get so much of how you feel about something out there. So having that platform for people to get started in spaces, to actually just get comfortable and just not be scared. And I feel like our spaces are small enough where, you know, it's like still like a little family. We don't have huge groups yet, where you can get up and talk, and, you know, everyone wants to hear from you because it's not so saturated with accounts trying to all speak. So it's a really great place to get your voice heard, get a little courage to talk, and then possibly go on a podcast one day.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think a lot of people are just afraid of public speaking in general, which is like a totally normal thing. But, you know, being, you know, I've done a lot of public speaking in my career. You know, you present in enough meetings, and then you kind of just break through that barrier psychologically where, hey, we're just meeting with friends and we're going to have a talk. We just hang out, chill, have fun. And yeah, those spaces are a lot of fun. We should have more of them. We tried to make them a regular thing, but I think we got to a point where there's not much. That's kind of the other thing about Bitcoin too, is people are logging into X every day and they're, what's new in Bitcoin today? What's new? What's the latest? It's like, there's really not a whole lot changing day to day. Like, there's new blocks every 10 minutes, but there's not a whole lot. We can talk about government policy, whatever, but the technology itself, that's the whole thing. It doesn't really change.
No, I think the thing that does, that's why I think sometimes people call us toxic Bitcoin maxis, because we like to shitpost, as they call it, on X. And I think that's the fun part, because when we understand Bitcoin and we understand that there is nothing else like Bitcoin and the technology is stable and unchanging and reliable, we know that there isn't much going on with it itself, but just as far as how it's being adopted globally. So when we hear people that either sound ridiculous or just sound like they have a learning disability, I hate to say it, when you're in the finance space and you still don't get it, like, you are in the finance world, you should get it more than anybody. But people are so stuck in this mentality that they're just, you know, they don't want to change. People are stubborn. They have they think, I don't know, change is a good thing. And I think people don't see that, but we like to shitpost about that and those people. So I think it's fun for us to get on and share, like, can you believe this guy said this? It's ridiculous.
You bring up a lot of good points. And one thing I think about, you know, you talk about financial advisors who are essentially giving their clients bad advice when they give them misinformed information about Bitcoin. I could be completely talking out of my rear end here, but I think there's a lot of financial advisors who are already getting that sort of flack from their customers because their customers may have came to them 8 years ago, 5 years ago, and said, hey, what about this Bitcoin thing? And they gave them bad advice then, and here we are today, and they now have to answer to these people, hey, why didn't you recommend this for me all these years ago when it's been doing so well since? So will they make that same mistake going forward? And you mentioned change is hard, obviously. They're sort of just clinging on to this old mentality, which at this point they have an assumption that that mentality is going to eventually see its logical conclusion with the Bitcoin going to zero, right? That's what they think is going to happen.
Yeah.
And if they don't cling on to that, if they don't hold on to that until that happens, which it won't, which is what we believe, right? They're going to lose their credibility with their investors, right?
Right.
They need to have a similar conviction in their beliefs that Bitcoiners have in our beliefs. So yeah, they're not, I mean, people like Peter Schiff, they're not going to suddenly just do a totally 180 on Bitcoin and say, yeah, I was wrong for years and years. Like, I think that's an ego thing where even if I am wrong at this point, I'm just going to keep doubling down on this because I can't admit that I was wrong. And again, they say Bitcoin's an ego test. That's like the first step is, can you admit to yourself that there are things about the world you don't understand, or maybe you had a false assumption about?
I would not want to
be a financial advisor in 2025.
Yeah, I think it would be like, if your kids are talking about going into that, I'd be like, just don't, like, just buy Bitcoin and just get out of that space. I think the reason I get upset about people like Peter Schiff is because I feel like they don't, it's not like they don't understand. They have to understand. They can't be that dumb. I think they just don't want to admit it, like you said. But then that makes you think, is this person just totally evil and just a scammer because they're convincing everyone else that they're right because they don't want to look stupid and lose their credibility. But on the other hand, they have their own Bitcoin stockpile, you know, that they're quietly collecting.
I mean, you never know. Like, he could just be putting on an act. Right? He could own Bitcoin himself.
I think he sells his gold stock or something like that, but I could be wrong.
Right.
Please comment below if you know the answer to Peter Schiff's actual value in the world. But I think that the thing that upsets me, I think he's literally just an engagement farmer. And I think he knows that when he talks, like, you know, bad about Bitcoin, that we're all going to get toxic back at him, and he's gonna just make a lot of money off of X by shitposting Bitcoin all the time. So he's literally just an engagement farmer.
If you want to talk about engagement farming on X, I think that's a whole other conversation because, you know, in recent years, just the way that X has changed and has been, you can now monetize your content, that has totally shifted the playing field of just what people are posting and why. I think if anybody follows my account and they've for any amount of time, you'll see I have a personal vendetta against Vivek. I think he's a writer for Bitcoin Magazine apparently, and I think he genuinely has the worst X account on the entire platform.
Because, you know what? You're right. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he, you'll see the same posts over and over. Anytime Bitcoin falls 5%, he is tweeting a screenshot and saying, who the F is selling Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. Like, he's just reposting the same tweets over and over and over again. I mean, and if that's what his goal is, to just farm engagement and get paid, like, sure, I can't knock the hustle because you are now incentivized to do that on this platform, and that's a whole other issue. Mm-hmm. But as, like, in our space specifically, I think he is just, I just think accounts like that are detrimental to the conversation because they are hyper sensationalized. He is inciting panic in people. He is constantly, he's kind of just this, he's always up. It's happening. It's happening. Mm-hmm. It's here we go. Oh my God, it's happening. And it's like, just,
you have a great point. Like, the algorithm needs work, because when it comes to these big accounts that like recycle this garbage, you know, the whole point about X being unregretted user minutes, this algorithm is pumping, just because it's a big account, just because it gets a lot of engagement. If you notice that they're just constantly posting the same thing, then X should realize, hey, we're paying this guy to keep, you know, putting this post in everyone's face. Even if I unfollowed him and I still see his posts when he puts them up. Because it just keeps wanting to push them into my feed. And I'm like, I'm tired of seeing, not that I want to block him or whatever, I don't care that much, but I just didn't want to actually follow and see every time, you know, he posts something. But I just think that the X algorithm is so messed up that just because he's a big account and gets engagement, doesn't it understand that this is literally the same thing that he says about every time Bitcoin price is going down? Like, yeah. I feel like Grok or the algorithm should be smarter than that to kind of like not push that kind of content as much, because it's just, it is regretted user minutes. I feel like I'm wasting my time just seeing that post every time. I'm like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah. And I mean, the same thing goes back to Peter Schiff too, right? He knows mm-hmm. that if he tweets negative things about Bitcoin, people are going to engage with it. And that's not his main source of income. And I imagine Vivek has other sorts of income, mm-hmm. but just wants to grow that footprint. You make a good point though. Like, I think the algorithm and sort of the whatever, if there are any moderators left at X who mm-hmm. look over content, they should kind of revisit that, because why are they paying people to just tweet the same garbage over and over? I haven't blocked Vivek yet. I've made it a personal mission to get him to block me, because I've just been mocking him in the replies so much, and I want to rally people against him. And Vivek, if you're listening, I have nothing against you personally. It's just, I think your content is terrible.
It's just recycled. Yeah, it's just boring.
Yeah.
So I would do anyway. I'll get on board with you with that. I think that'd be fun. I think that the last thing I wanted to say about Peter Schiff earlier, when I just totally got sidetracked because he just bothers me. But the thing that I was thinking is that he says very contradicting things in his post. So he'll say something about, when he talked about Bitcoin, he was saying, I don't understand it. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. Right. So when he said about the strategic reserve, so he's saying, he doesn't agree with it, obviously, but he's saying, but I get it, you know, but he says two opposing things. So because he's saying, I understand it and why they're doing it. So then Bitcoiners start getting that part of his post and they repost that saying, Peter Schiff's now a Bitcoiner and everyone's all excited. I didn't get my hopes up about it. I'm like, this guy is just going to turn around later. You know, who cares? Who cares if Peter Schiff likes Bitcoin now or understands it? Who cares? Cause he sucks. But, he then started reposting the very next day about how Bitcoiners are scammers because they're all sharing that he is now into Bitcoin. And he's like, I never said that. I said Bitcoin is like, I don't get it. And, I would never say that. So I don't get why they're all calling me a Bitcoiner now or something I'm not. And he's like, that's why they're scammers, because they're trying to pump the price. And I'm like, it's like very exhausting. Because I'm like, dude, you literally just, that's why you engagement farm, because you try to contradict yourself so that people could say something. Now you're calling Bitcoin scam, like Bitcoin people scammers, because you're confusing.
Right.
So he just tries.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
I think that kind of, this could be a good bridge and sort of another topic about bringing people to understand what Bitcoin is, because mm-hmm. if you, if you take a step back and think about it, to say you understand Bitcoin is, I kind of think it's a failure of the ego in of itself, because Bitcoin is such a multifaceted topic and is so new that there are very few people who genuinely, I would not include myself in this camp, like, who genuinely understand how Bitcoin works to a T, like, to explain every single element of Bitcoin perfectly. Like, there are very, people who've been in this space for 10 years will still say, hey, I'm still learning, right? Again, the sort of the failure of ego, like, you have to admit that you don't know everything, you might be wrong about some stuff, and you're still here to learn. And if you can't sort of apply that in your life in general, it's not going to apply to your knowledge of Bitcoin, your knowledge of money, your knowledge of anything. And that's I think something that a lot of people struggle with when they're first getting into Bitcoin, is it's just, there's so much information, there's so much to learn, and it's all very foreign and alien because it's unlike anything, you know, we've ever seen. It can be overwhelming for people. So they kind of just, they check out, they say, I don't understand it, but I disagree. Like, whatever it is, the knee jerk reaction is just this can't be real. Right.
And I think that's like another good segue into, us talking about, the concept of orange pilling and Bitcoin education, because, I think that when people do start to understand Bitcoin, you can understand, okay, what is mining? Like, the basic questions, what is mining? What is a transaction? Like, what is that stuff? Why is it so secure? Like, there's certain things you can understand, but I think the reason that we have a hard time and we're always learning what Bitcoin is and why we all feel like there's so much to learn every day about it, even though it's, like we said earlier, a technology that doesn't change. It's not, you know, it's no person or government or corporation, nobody can change the rules on Bitcoin. Nobody could create more of the tokens. We know that. So we know that it's, nothing changes with Bitcoin, but Bitcoin changes the world. So the thing, the reason it's crazy is because Bitcoin isn't, it's reshaping things, because when you think about it, exponential growth, like, technology is exponential growth. And they say the human mind can't fathom what that means. So when we think about Bitcoin being unchanging, but the fact that it is changing its environment around it, we're not able to comprehend what this exponential growth will mean for all different aspects of our economic, like world or socioeconomic world. Like, what, how will society be reshaped and changed because of it? It's such a transformative technology. And I think because of all these things, and because currency is deep rooted into how the world, it's like the blood of like a body, like the way that blood flows through your body and keeps things. That's what the financial world is. And it's sick right now. So with Bitcoin, it's like, it's healing things, but it's like in every aspect of our world. So we can't picture what the future will look like. We're trying to imagine it, but I think it's so hard. And we do always think of, oh, wow, this, like, it could affect different things. Like, people talk about Bitcoin being terrible for the environment if it uses a lot of energy, but then people use that energy to grow vegetables. Yeah. So, or companies are too greedy to then want to go green so that they could keep their profits instead of paying half of it to the electric company. So there's certain things that cause the world to become a better place because Bitcoin uses so much electricity. It's like, hey, let's find out better ways to go green so that we don't have to, because of greed, it'll force the world to change. So it's really
miners, especially, they're incentivized to find cheap and sustainable forms of electricity. Daniel Batten has a lot of great content topic. Yeah, so I'm still on LinkedIn, which is apparently pretty unpopular in Bitcoin Twitter, but it's good for my personal career. He posts on LinkedIn a lot. He's sort of a warrior on there, constantly sort of combating misinformation. And he'll sometimes repost, like, he has a list of 13 concrete examples of how Bitcoin has been a net positive for energy adoption across the world. Like I said, Bitcoiners, you're incentivized to find cheap and sustainable electricity when you're looking to mine and support the network. And that is good for the environment. I think I'm going to be probably misquoting this statistic, but it's something like over 50 to 60% of Bitcoin mining is actually done with renewable, sustainable energy. That's just a common myth about, why Bitcoin's bad for the planet, quote unquote. I mean, a simple way to combat that when you hear people say that is like, okay, well, how bad for the environment are your washing machine, your Christmas lights, you know, your air conditioner, your smoothie maker, right? That saying something is bad is just a relative term, because you're not equating it to what it does. We're supposed to use energy. We have to use energy to better our societies. And in my opinion, if we can use energy to make a better money that allows people to be free and have sovereignty over their capital, that is an inherent good, and it's worth every watt of energy that we can expend to do so.
Yeah, and because it's so worth it for companies to get it, because it's an actual money that actually is better and faster, and it actually works, and it's better in every way. But if it incentivizes these companies to find cheaper and more earth-friendly ways and faster ways to mine it, so it just benefits the world because they want to, you know, it's like the new oil or the new gold. Like, they want to get the best new thing, so they're just going to find the cheapest way to do it, so it's going to benefit everybody.
Exactly. And you can sort of come to that conclusion by bringing it back to the individual, right? It is good for the individual to own Bitcoin. Therefore, it is good for a family. Therefore, it's good for a community, right? Mm-hmm. All the way up to companies, to local governments, to federal governments, and for the world. Like, at every sort of stage of that scale of groups of people, there are positive incentives for them to own Bitcoin, for them to participate in the network, for them to run nodes, to run miners. Like, it goes all the way up. I do want to keep talking about orange pilling, but this sort of gets into the SBR and my sort of opinion on that, of why that's not enough for America. So I do want to get there, but we talked a little bit about orange pilling and like adoption and education. Let me ask you this. Do you still try to orange people in your everyday life outside of the internet? Are you still like, and I'll ask you why after you answer.
Okay. I have to say that I gave up on it for some time. I did for a while. I would try, but I feel like you start to become exhausted. And this leads into why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. I became exhausted repeating myself to people who, you know, there are people at my salon. I'm a hairstylist, so I sit with different people all the time, and the topic of finances always comes up because the world has become so expensive with inflation. So it's an easy transition into Bitcoin. So I did talk about it for a long time. I had to tell myself to just chill out and stop trying to mention it to people, because I feel like it just starts to burn you out a little bit. But I do see a lot of people a day. It's not like I'm somebody who's just sees my family members and a few coworkers. Like, I see new people all the time. And that's why I thought it was important to discuss it. So there are people who are totally fascinated and had no idea what it even was or ever heard of it. And they'll even ask me, where do I start? Like, what kind of app do I use? And they actually, in one session of me doing their hair, they usually say, okay, I'm going to get a little bit. Like, just by when they leave, they say, I'll buy $100, you know, just to buy it and just let it sit. And they say they're going to let it sit there. I just tell them, don't go if you're really hyped on it, because I just told you about all this stuff and you really want to go for it. Just dollar cost average, I tell everyone, because if they decide to just dump a bunch of money into it and then start watching the price and it goes down, they'll freak out and sell, and it's not a good thing. So I'm like, just use it as your savings account. And I just tell them, put $100, whatever you don't need, just add it there. And just, you know, it's a good thing to do. Like, you should do it. So people, I did for a long time do it, but then I kind of got burnt out. And I think that's why I started sort of talking about it again now, just because of all the political talk and about, you know, Doge saving money for the government and wiping out like a lot of the government theft, which is why we have inflation in the first place and why Bitcoin's important. So I feel like it's come back up as a topic at work. So I'm starting to discuss it again, but I love the fact that now with this podcast, because there are so many regular people out there, like, not everybody is a finance person. Not everybody is a you know, tech person. They don't understand this world. But when I'm a regular person who I understand Bitcoin and I love all that tech stuff and financial talk, but I can convey it in a way that is a regular person's, you know, a regular person understands. So I feel like this podcast will be great because I can share this with people. And instead of talking myself to death, I can be like, hey, follow my podcast. I'll tell you everything you need to know. And I could even play it at the salon, which is great. I can play these episodes at work too. Wow. You know, and I've done that already. And people loved it. Like, it was the first time in a hair salon. It's not a big place, it's family owned. But in a hair salon where normally people are just having multiple conversations, and I played my I think an episode that I was on someone else's podcast for the first time, and I put that on TV, and everybody was just like silent and watching, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe nobody's talking right now. That never happens.
That's
So
crazy.
people were very interested in hearing about it. They just want to hear about it in a regular person's point of view. That's not somebody who's going to get really technical about it and kind of bore them. I hate to say it, you know, because the regular people don't get it. So they're not going to just stick around and listen to what Bitcoin is if you get too technical.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, that's amazing. And that's awesome that you're able to put it in a way that's tangible for people. They understand. I tweeted about this a while back, I think early in the year. I think I'm kind of done with going out of my way to tell people about Bitcoin. It obviously still comes up a lot because I talk about it a lot, but because I kind of tried to imagine it from the other perspective of, hey, if someone's coming to me and telling me I should buy this thing and why I should, I can sort of understand why people get the impression of it being a scam because you're coming to them and saying, hey, buy this thing that I own. It's good for you. And the price is going to go up. I already own a bunch of it, but it's good for me if you buy it. And then, like you mentioned, if the price goes down, they're going to question why they did it in the first place. They don't have the personal conviction to hold it in tough times. Mm-hmm. And they also don't have the conviction to hold it in good times. So if they were to make a lot of money on their investment, they would say, okay, I won, right? Like, this is it. I'm checking out.
The end game is fiat. Yeah, checking out for fiat. And they just think, oh, cool, I sold it. I'm good.
No, exactly. They're buying Bitcoin to own more dollars, where we are selling our dollars to own more Bitcoin forever, right? The issue with this is you're trying to convince people of something that you yourself still don't fully understand yet. And you think, yeah, I understand this enough where I could go out and answer everyone's questions about it all the time. I think a better way to here's kind of the concept I apply to it, right? If you think of Bitcoin as a more moral money system, right?
Yeah.
You're essentially trying to tell someone to live a more moral life, right? And the easiest way to do that is to lead by example, right? You're not going to, you know, how do you teach a child to behave morally? You have to actually, you know, show them what it's like to be a good person, a good spouse, a good friend, right? You have to lead by example. So, and this sort of happened in my personal life where, you know, I'd go to family Christmas parties and I was known as, you know, a few people knew me as, oh, you're the guy with the Bitcoin, that Bitcoin thing, whatever. You know, you go 1 year and you tell people, yeah, Bitcoin's great. I bought a bunch of it. If you come back 2 years later and the price has dipped and you say, yeah, well, I actually ended up selling it for whatever reason, you've kind of lost all your credibility to those people. And it's tough for them to believe you because you didn't have the conviction to believe in yourself with that initial investment you made. And clearly you're flip-flopping in your opinions a lot, right? So it's better if you can be that person that is there and you're willing to tell people about it, you're willing to talk about it, but you're not going to push them on it. And I think at the end of every single sentence you say, you should say, but I'm an idiot and I actually don't know anything. So go do your own research, come to your own conclusion.
Right.
And I'd be happy to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
So going out there and like, there's some people that are like, they feel the evangelizing spirit of pushing adoption and making education materials available to as many people as possible. I think that's awesome. I think Bitcoin needs more of that. But the best way to push Bitcoin adoption is to be the Bitcoiner in your small circle of friends and or family and stay with it for years to come, because people will see that and they'll see you leading by example and being that Bitcoin person who was unwavering in their conviction for years on end. Obviously, you know, and then people sort of, they think, oh, it's going to be too late for my family if they wait 10 years to buy Bitcoin. And maybe it will be, but if they're not going to listen to you today, then you can lead a horse to water, you can't make it drink.
Right.
And until they have that sort of need and desire to do it for themselves, it's going to fall on deaf ears and you won't get anywhere.
My husband made a really good shirt on his site about that. It says, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. That's the t-shirt he made.
That's awesome. There's also a Satoshi quote, like direct from that. It's like, I don't have the time or the energy to explain it to you.
Right.
If you don't get it, I don't have the time to explain it to you. And that's true. Like, I think we can do better things for Bitcoin than sort of combating the same tired repeat arguments over and over. Like, I commented on some guy's post on LinkedIn where he was calling Bitcoin a scam. He was calling it a, you know, you're just selling it to the next guy who'll pay more for it. Mm. It doesn't do anything, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, we've been hearing this exact argument you've laid out for years now. Like, there's, I said, respectfully, there's nothing new that you're offering with this criticism.
Right.
Like, you need to go a little bit further and talk about, okay, why is proof of work not sustainable? Why are, you know, private wallets or custodians a bad thing? Like, get a little more critical thinking involved if you're going to criticize it at that level instead of just,
like,
oh.
You sound like the internet is a passing fad, like, kind of comments all the time, you know?
Oh, yeah. I did not live through that personally, but I, you know, you hear a lot of people say there's similarities to the internet and to Bitcoin as sort of their adoption. I imagine it's the same for any new technology, right? You think of horse and buggy times. They thought of the car as just a faster horse and buggy. No, it was an entirely different thing. And it
was
opened
an industrial revolution, right?
It was an industrial revolution. Now we can move freight across large distances. Now we can get from A to B. And now we have self-driving cars. Like, this, be totally changing the playing ground that we're on is...
Nobody was able to understand in the Industrial Revolution, okay, the car came out, they thought it was just a faster horse and buggy, but they couldn't, because it's a transformative technology and exponentially growing technology, they couldn't fathom what that means for how the future will be reshaped and molded. Same with Bitcoin. So because it's this transformative technology, it's transforming the landscape of the future, and we can't yet understand what implications that's going to have. One thing you mentioned about how you said about Bitcoiners leading by example, it makes 100% sense to me. And that's why I think that saying stay humble, stack sats, I don't want to be a person who's pushing it on anybody who doesn't want to hear it. If it doesn't come up naturally in conversation, like when it comes to finances or inflation in my chair when I'm working, I'm not going to go out of my way to just chill it to people. But the thing about being humble, it's very true, because, you know, when you think about that crypto bro, like people that get into crypto and they're making buttloads of money because some coin they just happened to pick, like, the right one that went up a lot, like, they're boastful people, they're bragging, they like to post things about all the stuff they bought, all the new houses, like, people just love to brag. You know, once you become a maxi and you're not just into crypto, I think you just realize this is for the long term. This is not just for my retirement, my future. This is for my kids or my future. Anyone in my family that I could help, even if you don't have kids of your own, you have nieces and nephews, you can pass something on to them one day. Like, we all, I think, as Bitcoiners, we get to the point in life where we think material things are a waste and we just want to be happy, spend time with our loved ones, enjoy our life, have laughs with people. And we just don't really care too much about material things. So I think that we just feel like as long as we're able to escape the fiat prison, you can take care of your body. You can spend time as you get older, taking care of yourself instead of like grinding till you're 75 years old and working till you die, you know? So it's like, this is the dream of the Bitcoiners.
You said a lot of awesome things. I totally agree with, I totally agree that once you've kind of gotten to the Bitcoin maximalist stage, you know, you shouldn't be bragging about your wealth. I think there's like a deeper reason for that, is because you can't go online talking about how much Bitcoin you own, because that makes you a target, right? A lot of people like to post their stashes. You know, it's fine if you want to, you know, hey, I bought $100 today. I know we have our Smash Buy community. You know, shout out to AA who runs that.
Yes.
But I'm always kind of cautious to, when people say, hey, I reached one Bitcoin today, it's like, congrats, but I would delete this post, because don't make yourself a target.
For people who don't understand that might be watching this, as far as being attacked for someone to steal your Bitcoin, if you have it in your wallet, they literally need to know your 24-word password. And if they end up, I've said this in my first pilot episode too, I don't know if I should say the word, like if they kill you, you know, but I said that. but if they kill you, they can't get it anyway. So it's like, then it's gone. Now it's lost to the universe. So it's like, they really have no incentive to do that to you, because now they can't get it anyway.
Oh yeah. To be clear, like, if you're practicing best practices of cold storage, it's really just about making yourself a harder target than most, right? If you think about American HODL posted a really good analogy where, I think it was a group of deer or elk or something. When wolves are attacking, they will form this large circle, and they circle around the young, and they place their young in the very center of the circle. And it makes it really hard for wolves to get to the young in the very middle, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to be as close to the middle as possible by just practicing good security, you know, staying vigilant, staying on top of your seed rays and your storage solutions. Like you won't lose sleep over it. I certainly don't. But you brought up another point about the crypto bros, right? Social media, they're posting their major gains. Mm-hmm. For every crypto bro you see that is posting that, number one, social media is fake. So I don't really believe a lot of that is real to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But for every crypto bro that made $1 million on a pumping coin, there were 999,000 people that lost money on the same thing. Like, and then it just gives this really toxic sort of image that, hey, you can do this too, as long as you follow this framework I've developed and you find the next coin that's totally going to pump. I've been in Bitcoin technically since like 2015, but I took a very long break, and I got sort of back into it once I graduated college and I started my career. You know, I had a little bit of money. I fell into that altcoin phase, you know, in like 2020, 2021. You fall for it, and people make really convincing arguments. They use a lot of fancy words of like, yeah, this cool technology is going to do this thing, and it could potentially do this. And you're like, okay, great. I'll buy some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at one point, you know, I probably at one point had 15, 20 different altcoins that I was invested in one way or another, with on top of Bitcoin, obviously.
Right.
But it definitely was not putting the money into Bitcoin like I should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously none of those went anywhere, and I sold them all. But it is sort of there's no better teacher than experience in that regard. So sometimes if I see people going down that path, I am like, yeah, you probably shouldn't do that. But again, you can tell people things, but until they sort of feel the pain themselves, they're not gonna truly get it. And I never got like truly rug pulled where anything that I bought literally went to zero instantly, but you know, you do lose a significant amount of money during those bear markets and down times, buying the tops of like, I don't know, VeChain and Cardano and Ethereum and just all these random nothing coins that are kind of just riding the trend. It's a rite of passage. Everyone goes through it. It's okay.
Yes, it is a rite of passage. I 100% agree with that. It does remind me of like a parent with a child. Like, you can't put your child in a bubble. They have to fall and hurt themselves a few times, sadly, you know, but that's the way they learn. But one thing I wanted to bring up, which I think is an interesting like point or segue or whatever, is knowing that there's a Bitcoin strategic reserve with only about a little over 2 million Bitcoin left on exchanges right now. And if the U.S. government buys 1 million of those, that's more like almost half the supply left on exchanges right there. So there's this game theory playing out between governments and all this stuff. And I think that the more that it's not being talked about in the news, so I think it's kind of like hush hush. So I think when it comes to XRP, it's like one of those things that I think that will keep people stuck in that prison, because now you're not going to, the U.S. dollar's like dying. Now it's like, okay, now we have XRP, we have this stable coin. Oh, look how much Doge has saved from the U.S. government being such thieves all these years and stealing your money. So now let's get XRP to be this stable coin that we can just send you back refunds on a blockchain, so we know where everything is. They want a transparent blockchain where everything goes in and out of, right? So now you get the stable coin back to you. They say, okay, you can buy, live your life. You can have a more comfortable life because now you can go and spend it on things you need in the world. But you can't buy Bitcoin with it. So it's like, you can't invest this money. You can only use it to live. So therefore, the people that are just happy sitting there like, oh, wow, I'm going to be getting this like universal basic income in the future because technology and the robotics have created so much productivity and increase in productivity and labor in the world. So that's what will keep the people happy and quiet, while the people that are actually already have been buying Bitcoin will be benefiting from the freedom aspect of their money, that as it's growing, it's actually gaining real value because there's scarcity there. Where with everything else, there's no scarcity and there's somebody that can corrupt the supply of anything. Bitcoin is different that way. So I just think XRP is just the way to control people's spending and keep them quiet while they don't go collect Bitcoin, while the governments go and do it. That's my And you know I'm a paranoid Bitcoin anarchist, so I like to talk about all these like theories. You know, I'm
You're the
always like,
queen of
what are
paranoid
people doing?
anarchists.
Thank you. Thank you so much. But yeah, that's like my, I like to kind of get into like the what are they really doing kind of stuff, you know? Like
So you brought up a lot of good points and a lot of buzzwords. I certainly have some thoughts. I agree. I think XRP, it's a shame that it even gets mentioned in the same sentence as Bitcoin. The XRP saga, I haven't really followed it that closely, but what I know about it and just how I've tracked it over the years, it's very strange that it's gotten this far. And I think it's really disappointing that Trump and his people around him, I'm not personally a fan of Trump one way or the other. I think he's kind of a jerk, but he's got a lot of people in his ear constantly. And I think what I imagine is happening, these XRP CEOs are making him some really big promises on something that he doesn't really understand very much, and the people in his circle are not effectively filtering those kind of people out, right? You got the Trump sons tweeting about Ethereum and all these other things. It's just strange that he's talking to people like Saylor, who we haven't brought him up yet. That could be a whole other conversation. He's got Saylor and he's got Brian Armstrong and he's got this sort of barrage of people telling him a million different things. I personally don't think Trump understands any of it, right? I think he saw the Bitcoiners as a political segment that would be advantageous to have on his side in the election, which was certainly the case. And his team and his strategy was kind of like, hey, let's make some promises to these Bitcoiners. They'll vote for you and it'll be great. I don't think he truly, truly gets Bitcoin, because if he did, I think he'd be a little more gung-ho about it. He's the first president that's really taken it seriously, so I'm kind of discounting that, but I just don't buy it. I don't think he truly, truly gets it.
I agree with you. I think that he doesn't understand. I think that he's just listening to people and thinking, what? Oh, but I have, here's another thought I have. Okay, sorry. Going along with that, I feel like everything is a narrative. You know, I feel like everything is like, how will this look to people and what, how will this sway their perception of a thing? So I think even when he, when we saw that he was coming out with the Trump coin, every Bitcoiner was like, come on now, really? Like, you're supposed to be the first Bitcoin president and you're doing this, like you're coming out with a rug pull, like a shit coin for people. I think that's part, again, paranoid hat on. This is the part of me that thinks that he's swaying a narrative because if enough people see that, oh, this president that's really into Bitcoin also came out with a Trump coin. Look at him. He's so selfish and arrogant and he came out with his own coin because he wants to make money. So it's just swaying anybody that is a fan of Trump that understands, oh, he does like Bitcoin, but he also made me lose a shit ton of money on this Trump thing. I'm not buying any more of that stuff. I still like him, but I'm not going to waste my money on this. So I think that it's like a narrative that they're pushing that, look, crypto is crazy. I released a coin myself as the president who believes in Bitcoin, but look, you just lost a lot of money. So it's like kind of like swaying people to get away. And I think if Trump is talking to Saylor about a strategic Bitcoin reserve, which they are gonna do, but they also want the majority of not just the U.S., the rest of the world is watching too. So it's not just the U.S. that sees this. It's like he is telling the rest of the people, you know what they want to hear as far as don't buy crypto, it's dangerous. Because if he did start saying Bitcoin is the best, it's going to get you out of this fiat trap world and grow your wealth, so it teaches you how to actually save where your money beats inflation. If they start saying that to everybody, sort of people really hear the government start to actually say this is the only trustworthy one, this one is the best one, this one is a real, you know, has actual value because of its scarcity, because it can't be corrupted by anyone, not including myself. If they say that to everybody and actually start really talking about it and being gung-ho about it, what is going to happen when every American doesn't just buy $100 of it, buys $1,000 or $10,000 of it? Or what if the millionaires in the world that there are so many of go and just deplete the supply overnight? Then Bitcoin will run away from the governments to be able to have it and benefit off of it more. So they want to be able to control the wealth of the world, just like powerful people always do. And I think that they're pushing narratives. That's what I think this is all about.
I 100% agree. And you mentioned stable coins and CBDCs. I don't think people really grasp sort of the Orwellian nature of what those really are. And because I could be wrong about this, so I'll put an asterisk about it, but I understand China has a pretty rigid social credit score system, and you know their money is pretty controlled. That's not an economy that is empowering the sovereign and is allowing you to live free. So for XRP to come in and try to sort of ride those coattails and put your money and your purchasing power not only in the hands of the government but in the control of, like, mm-hmm. that's when they can actually start to limit your freedoms and prevent you from doing anything they don't want. It's very bleak, and I just don't think regular people understand how evil that really is.
Yeah.
And yeah, you mentioned, let's talk about the strategic Bitcoin reserve, because I do have some thoughts about it. Mm-hmm. I'll say that, you know, I was, you know, if you look back at my posts, I was really in between if I ever thought it was going to happen. I went back and forth a lot. I kind of thought it was never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But it did. And it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's very exciting. It's very cool. But I don't think it goes far enough. Mm-hmm. And let me explain. So it's great that the United States is not going to sell the Bitcoin it already owns, and that it does mm-hmm. have a path forward to buy more Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's enough. I think it would be pointless to stop at simply buying Bitcoin and holding it, right? Earlier I talked about, if you can sort of abstract the behaviors of an individual all the way up to a government, you know, if you think about it, yes, it's good for an individual to own Bitcoin. It's also good for an individual to own their own Bitcoin node. It's even better for an individual to do those two things and to be a miner and to have their mm-hmm. own piece of hash rate that they're contributing to the network. Mm-hmm. We can extract that all the way up to the United States government, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've probably heard of Jason Lowery and Softwar, mm-hmm. right? I bought the book and I tried to read it. It's a very tough read. It's very long, mm-hmm. but from what I understand is the core thesis of it, right? It's a power projection technology in the digital mm-hmm. world. And I think as part of the strategic reserve, the United States should say, hey, not only we're going to buy Bitcoin and we're going to hold it, we're going to also develop our own network of nodes across the country. We are going to contribute to the hash rate. We are going mm-hmm. to start mining, right? Because mm-hmm. where this eventually leads is controlling some of that hash rate and controlling 100%. The ability to create blocks in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something I replied to Michelle the other day, something that people don't think about enough is that the scarcity of Bitcoin blocks in the future is going to become a really big problem, and access to the base layer of Bitcoin is going to be a premium and a huge privilege in the future, right? I asked Grok before he came to this call, approximately 52,560 Bitcoin blocks are created in a year. Mm. That's it, right? Think about it, in 20, 30 years from now, if you want to get in on one of those 52,000 blocks, you're going to have to pay some pretty substantial fees to be included. Mm-hmm. Your average Bitcoin user is not going to have access to that base layer in the future, right? In a few generations, we're going to be able to say, yeah, when I wanted to send my Bitcoin to cold storage, I would just send it on the base layer. And that's going to blow people's yes. minds. What do you mean you had access to the base layer? Nobody has access to the base layer. Everybody knew that as Bitcoin scaled and it became the global financial reserve money of the world, they knew that in order for us to, you know, buy coffee with Bitcoin, we're going to have to build on top of this base layer. We're going to need layer twos and threes. You know, the Lightning Network is a great example of this, right? Mm-hmm. Because the Lightning Network can handle faster transactions for smaller amounts for cheaper fees, whereas the base layer of Bitcoin was never really designed for that. I think that's a sort of misconception, especially for newer people, where you know, you talk to someone and say, how would I buy my coffee with Bitcoin? It's like, mm-hmm. you can if you want, but why would you? Like, why would you use a gold bar to buy coffee? Lightning Networks, layer twos and threes, that is sort of critical in the next phase of how do I pay for my coffee with Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the future, you're not going to be able to pay for your coffee on the base layer because the fees are going to be so wildly expensive, but you will be able to pay for it on the Lightning Network.
Right.
And maybe your coffee shop, like maybe Starbucks has their own layer three where they say, hey, if you give us a little bit of Bitcoin or a little bit of Lightning Network Bitcoin, you can have an account here. And every time you go, you swipe your card and we'll just take from your Bitcoin balance. Like that's sort of the future we need to get to. But in order to get there, I'll bring it back to the SBR, right? We have to have access to that base layer of Bitcoin, period, like as a country. I did listen to one episode, I think it was of What Bitcoin Did, where there was a, I could send you the link afterwards because I'm blanking on it, but there was a gentleman discussing the concept of a block template, and I'm totally going to butcher this explanation. So again, go do your own research if you're listening, but essentially what a block template is, it is a format to choose which transactions get included in the creation of a new block that the miners can sort of format, right? They can say, I'm going to mine blocks that include these types of transactions for these fees, you know, and this is where it gets really technical for me and the average person. But the takeaway is if the United States as a sovereign nation doesn't have access to our own sort of blocks in our own templates, then we are at the mercy of the rest of the world for how we do our transactions. So I could see us getting to a state where, okay, every millionaire on the planet has Bitcoin, every country on the planet has Bitcoin, but all the hash rate is controlled by, you know, this party or this company. Therefore they are in charge of what transactions get included. And that's a future we don't want to get to, where it's the base layer access is going to be a premium in the future. I think that's going to be something that companies start to sell, right? They're going to sell to banks, to institutions, to companies. Hey, I can guarantee you X amount of Bitcoin blocks in this time frame. So give me the transactions you want to include, and I will make sure those transactions get included in that, you know, time frame and those blocks. Because if you think about it, if you say, my company owns 1% of the Bitcoin hash rate, therefore I have a 1% chance of mining a block in this time frame. So there's going to be a marketplace for access to that base layer. And people are going to pay out the wazoo for that. Right? I still think the better alternative is the U.S. government just owns its own mining. We have maybe a division of our government that says, hey, the charter for this department, right, is to grow our mining network. It is to ensure that American individuals and corporations have access to the base layer. They're able to get their transactions included to foster economic prosperity and sovereign money in our country, right? That's be sort of like their initial goal. Another piece for the audience to keep in mind is within, I want to say it's less than 10 years, 99% of all Bitcoins will have been mined forever, right?
Yes.
So the next 1% of Bitcoins to be mined will come out over, I think it is the next 120 years. After which, the network will only be, there will be no more new blocks issued when a block reward is found. The miners on the network will only be sustained by fees that are incurred from transactions on the network. People forget about this, like, because Bitcoin is a tech. You hear a lot of people talk about Bitcoin as a multi-generational thing, and it is a computer network that in theory can exist for thousands of years, right? Only time will tell if we are able to keep it going that long. I think not a lot of people are skeptic enough about Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoiners themselves are not skeptic enough about the longevity of Bitcoin to ask tough questions like this and to think about the future. But when we get to that last block reward, when we get to 2140 and all the Bitcoins out there, like, that's all that's going to be out there forever. And now we are just sending the same amount of money back and forth forever.
I just never really thought about the fact that obviously there's going to be no more block rewards. I did know that there was going to be just fees. I did. But I just think, like, for some reason, it's kind of like blowing my mind right now that I didn't think about more block rewards being given.
It's crazy to think about. And obviously the technology is going to be light years different between now and then, where there's going to be, you know, layer 4, 5, and 6s that all gets built on top of Bitcoin, right? You think of Bitcoin as the base protocol, whereas like TCP/IP is the base protocol for the internet, and we mm-hmm. build things on top of the internet. We build, mm-hmm. you know, companies build software on the internet, yada, yada. That's where Bitcoin goes from here. It is the new, and Saylor kind of uses this metaphor, yes. of like you own a couple blocks in digital Manhattan.
Yes.
And that's all that there will be for all of time. I think that's a good way to think about it in terms of like your purchasing power and your capital, but the Bitcoin block as a commodity itself is a whole other thing. And mm-hmm. owning, you have to own, you can only really ever own potential access to that. You can only ever own a chance to participate in that lottery, right? Yeah.
And that's why the U.S. government, they have to go beyond. They have to start mining, because once even they don't get a chance at these block rewards anymore, they have to participate in the forever growing future of this new digital economy, where they want to be able to receive these block rewards as far as just the fees then. I think teaching people, because a lot of people hear, like even I was a little bit baffled by the fact that when people just say, no, I'm just going to hold Bitcoin till I die, I'm never going to ever sell it. Never. That's it.
That's silly.
And I feel like when people say that, I would get a little confused. So my new favorite saying that I don't know who said it, but I was inspired by this and I feel like I'll never forget it, is never sell your Bitcoin, live off your Bitcoin. So I think that is the way to really say it.
I would tweak it and say never sell your Bitcoin for more dollars. Right?
Yeah,
that's right. The whole point is, why are you selling your Bitcoin for the inferior money you're trying to escape in the first place?
Like, right.
I totally agree. Like, I think it's kind of cringe when people say, "What, you know, how dare you sell your Bitcoin? Like, what is the matter?" Like, they think you're failing the network by selling it. It's like, no, I'm using it. I think if you're selling your Bitcoin to buy a house, like, that's amazing. If you're selling your Bitcoin to pay for your medical bills, your child's education, like, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it's meant to do. It's meant for you to put your money, which is the abstraction of your time and energy, into something that is going to sustain and you have to live your life too. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of Bitcoiners, they get sort of hung up on the idea of, you know, it's good to be frugal and to sort of cut back on your living expenses so you can live within your means. You know, that sort of traditional financial advice is still applicable, but I think a lot of Bitcoiners start to sacrifice their sanity and their life just to stack more sats.
And it's, I think you're right. Yeah. And I think the reason that Saylor, because people, we all adore Saylor. I think he's super intelligent and he's taught me a lot through his metaphors and the way he talks about systems. And I've learned a lot from Michael Saylor. But when people think of Michael Saylor saying never sell your Bitcoin, they think, I'm never going to sell it. I'll take it to my grave with me. For Saylor, it makes sense because he has no family. He has no kids. He has nobody to really leave this to. He's doing it because he wants it to be like a legacy for himself. And that's why that makes sense to me. But when he tells us to never sell your Bitcoin, he's literally saying it like, stop trading this shit. And just like,
right,
accumulate it slowly, dollar cost average. Like, why are you trading it? Like, stop trading it. I think
that's what he means. I think a lot of people misinterpret that too, because I think he would agree. Yeah, if you have to pay a medical bill or you have to buy a house or pay your kids, you know, pay some debt, then yeah, do it. Like, why are you questioning it? Let's talk about Saylor for a bit, because obviously a very polarizing figure in Bitcoin and in traditional finance in general. I like to sort of preface this by saying, I think Bitcoin has no heroes. I don't think anybody should really idolize one person as much. Yeah, I agree. I love Saylor. I think he's great for people getting into Bitcoin and he's sort of being that evangelist. But I would just caution people, you know, we shouldn't put him on such a pedestal.
Right.
Because in my opinion, his novel theory of my company is going to take out as much debt as possible to acquire all the Bitcoin I could physically get my hands on, right? And I agree. Yes, I think his eventual plan, they haven't really formally announced this, but his eventual plan is to be the world's largest Bitcoin bank. And he's talked about this with Saifedean. He's like, I want to eventually generate yield on Bitcoin. I want to loan it, right? I can totally see that happening. And I think anyone who's been in Bitcoin long enough can sort of recognize that's his long-term plan. Regardless, the MicroStrategy /strategy play of let's issue debt, let's buy as much Bitcoin as we can, and just repeat the cycle and get as much debt as the market will allow us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no expert in this by any means, but my gut tells me there are only two ways that this story will end, right? He will either, Mike Strategy will either become the largest corporation on the planet, market cap wise. They will be the most valuable company. They will own the most Bitcoin. They will be the first Bitcoin bank. They will be a pioneer, you know, in this way. The other option is Saylor goes to prison and the heads of Strategy go to prison for fraud. And this whole debt issuance to buy more Bitcoin, this whole thing was a racket this whole time. The House of Cards comes collapsing down, and they go to jail. Like we have an FTX level event, eventually where we find out there have been some nefarious things going on behind the scenes. You know, Saylor's been lying. He's been pushing this. Like that's how I see this playing out. Like
I feel like that could be a thing, but I think that like even when the thing happened with FTX, nobody really was talking about the fact that he was connected the way he was to certain politicians and certain political groups until after the event happened. So it's not like we really had this warning like, oh, he's a shady guy because he's doing this and he's involved with that and knows these people. So we really didn't, that wasn't as like, almost like people didn't uncover truths until there started to be, until he started to screw up and things went to you know. And then that's when he decided to actually just, that's when people decided to like investigate and actually come out with these truths and find out what was really going on. So really, yeah, we always want to be skeptical. We're paranoid Bitcoin anarchists. Like we shouldn't be 100% trusting in anybody. I think Saylor, the reason he is so great is because he has taught people so much. I feel like he makes sense of it. Like just like how I want to make sense of it to people that aren't technical, I feel like he did that for me. And I feel like I value that very much.
And I totally agree. And, you know, full disclosure, I am a Strategy shareholder. Like, okay. I think what he is doing is really novel and exciting. And he's really pioneering this. And like I said, I think there's an outcome here where finance college courses get rewritten in the future, where they say Saylor was the first person to issue debt to buy Bitcoin, and he turned his company into a Bitcoin company, and this is how every other company followed that path. You know, after that, some companies are starting to do that, not like huge ones, but again, I think Bitcoiners by their nature are inherently skeptic, and we remember the past very vividly. So when things like this happen, we can't help but think to other times in the past where everything seemed so great for a while and everything was fine until it wasn't, and the House of Cards came crumbling down. Like,
yeah, you just remain cynical about these things, you know?
I think he's great. I think he's doing some really important things. But the only... His theory remains untested in my mind. Like his idea of I'm gonna issue debt, I'm gonna buy Bitcoin, and we'll have to see what's next. We haven't seen a down market with his investments, right? We haven't really seen him get really underwater profit wise with his Bitcoin. We haven't seen him transform it into a bank. You know, maybe they transform into a bank and they have some suboptimal technology that for whatever reason loses coins, or you know, any number. This is, it's just such a wild west of possibility. I like to say it's good to be on the edge of technology, and it's good to be like an early developer of things, but you don't want to be on the bleeding edge. You don't want to be the first one to get sort of wrecked, if that makes sense. Like a good,
well, that's why I think that's why my husband always says that too. He's like, you never want to be the first person to buy like that new car model that came out. You want to wait till like the second or third model to get it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that's why like Bitcoin, getting into it when you did or when I did, is kind of, it's nicer because people that got into it early, they didn't understand the value of it. They didn't know what it was going to grow to become. So they were on the bleeding edge of this, and they are the kind of people that you hear stories about losing their keys because they didn't really understand where it was going to go or what it was going to become. They're the people that sold it to buy pizza, you know, so that's the stories we'll all remember that are historic. But it's like those people didn't know what they had. So yes, when the opportunity came to be like, oh, I could pay $10,000 for some $40 thing, they did it because it's like, wow, I can spend this crypto stuff, you know? And I think that it was almost like a blessing and a curse to like to know about it so early, but you also, I think, were cursed because you always kept thinking, well, what if something better comes along? And it just didn't. You know, it's like Bitcoin's been here, it stuck through it, and when we got involved, we actually realized, we learned these things at the time we did, so it's kind of like a, it's not, it's early, but not the bleeding edge.
100%. I love the 10,000 bitcoins for the pizza story. I think a couple of things on that. One, it's important to keep in mind that we live in an entirely different world than we do now. Back then, when those, you could pay 10,000 bitcoins for a pizza, like, and Bitcoin needed people to go through those early stages of adoption to sort of legitimize it. Like, that's the part of the natural life cycle of how this should occur, right? The second piece about that is, a lot of people, they kind of kick themselves. They're like, man, if only I heard about Bitcoin 10 years ago when it was $100. Man, I wish I would have bought it then. You have to think about, okay, yeah, let's say you did have the opportunity to buy Bitcoin at $10 or a penny, right? Would you have had the conviction to hold it past $1,000, past 10,000? Like, and it's natural that some people would say, oh yeah, I'm up 10,000% on this investment. I'm gonna sell some and take some profit. But again, you're taking that profit from more fiat dollars. You're still thinking in that mindset of, I'm gonna use this to get more fiat dollars, where you should be thinking about it of like, I am securing my place in the future of money for the rest of time, and for my bloodline, right? This is gonna be passed down to my family. Where so you hear any like OG Bitcoiner who's been in the space and been a present in the space, I should say, for 10 years or so now, they live off their Bitcoin like we talked about, but they're also they're very cognizant of just sort of the mental fortitude you need to have to never sell in a way that's like, I'm selling this so I can have more money and just sit on my money. No, you have to believe in it enough. And if you were buying a Bitcoin at $100, most people would not have the belief or conviction to hold it all the way to 100K. Even the people you talk to in your salon, when you orange pill them, if we're at a, we're at 90,000 right now, are they going to have the conviction to sell it when it hits a million?
Yeah, they probably won't, honestly. But you just hope to tell them that like you're not late to this, you're very early to this, even though you think the price is high. It's gonna keep going up because it's scarce. I think if you just teach people about the scarcity, that it's not gonna end there. It's gonna keep going for a long time. So it just depends on what's your time preference. Do you have kids that also you want to pass something down to? Do you not have kids? What, you know what I mean? There's certain things you gotta think about, but I think for people, they have to just understand that try to like skim it as you need it, but just try not to sell it. It's gonna happen. I mean, it will. I think if people get greedy, and it's human greed is a natural thing, and I think you have to, like you said, like get hurt a little bit or deal with some pain in order to learn. And then once they do get burned, then they realize like, hey, maybe I should learn more about this thing, and just continue dollar cost averaging. I think that hap it's like a rite of your it's a rite of passage.
And for the record, it's a pretty good problem to have if we have people that are buying Bitcoin at these prices and they sell it in the future when it's much higher, and that means they're bringing home more money for themselves. Like, I to be clear, that's kind of still a good thing. Like, that's great. You made more money, you improved your life, you made a wise investment. But and there's a book called I don't know if you ever read the Psychology of Money. I'm forgetting who the author is. I read that a long time ago before I was really diving into the sort of why behind Bitcoin. Money is different for a lot of people, right? Everybody has a very different relationship with money. Everybody is they grow up with a different understanding of it. There's different cultural sort of expectations about money, how you should use it, what it means to you, how it comes to you. So everybody is approaching the concept of money with a different mindset, right? So therefore they're going to come to Bitcoin with a very different experience. And there's trauma associated with money for some
There is.
people, right? There's generational trauma that gets passed down about money and people that have been through bank runs, and it's happened in this country in the lifetimes of some of our grandparents, right? Money's a really sensitive thing for people. It's
And
very
that's probably a main reason why people are afraid to like take that look in the mirror and actually study it, because they are traumatized by it. They don't want to think about it.
Not only study it, but take any sort of risk, right? Bitcoin, you know, as much as Bitcoiners refuse to admit, like, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, Bitcoin is still risky. Like, we're still early enough in the life story of Bitcoin where we're still taking a risk. We're still on that edge, right? If you are a Bitcoiner in 2025, you are, you know, in the 1% of the world who is participating in this experiment of a new digital sound money. I,
In the
you
big
know,
picture, yeah,
yeah,
it really is.
I think people should still have that healthy assumption that, yeah, this could all go south tomorrow, right?
Just
Is it
to stay a little paranoid. I mean, you have to. It's
just to
like,
have
why,
a healthy bit of
Yeah,
skepticism
you have to.
never really hurts. You can obviously still have conviction in that you think this is the more probable outcome. And, you know, all things considered, it's very unlikely that Bitcoin is ever going away. And you can kind of assume that with a high degree of certainty, but nothing in life is guaranteed.
But
So
that's
it,
why I think
you
so
know.
many maxis, I think so many maxis are like very, paranoid in the first place. That's why they found out about it, because they wanted to escape this system that they were feeling like was unfair. So they wanted to find answers and seek out the truth. But I feel like that's also when we have that base layer of seeking out truth as part of our personality. When you get involved with more Bitcoin people, you try to have these discussions, and you try to actually say when something could be something that people like FUD or whatever, people get scared of some kind of news that they think is a bad thing for Bitcoin. We try to discuss it together and post about it, so we could see like, is this something anyone else is afraid of? I'm gonna check it out. And it's like, if you don't, I feel like we try to find out answers. We try to debunk these things. Like for quantum computing, for example, people get freaked out when they hear, oh, quantum computer, but they forget that Bitcoin has a built-in difficulty adjustment in its software. So it's like, you forget that if that happens, and it happens really quick, then it's going to quickly adjust to make it that much harder for anything to get solved. Because the whole genius of Satoshi was to make it so that if computing gets that much more advanced, then the biggest companies and corporations in the world will have the best equipment, then they can't just mine the rest of it in the next 4 years instead of the next 100, because that would make the system totally unfair again. So he made it so it would be impossible based on the way it was coded. So that's truly amazing. And but we do try to find out what can be wrong with this, and we try to think it together. But there's so many of us, even though it's a small chunk of the world, we're very tiny, but there's a lot of us out there that seek truth, and we like to educate each other on potential risks and stuff to look out for.
And I think that kind of just speaks to the type of person that gets into Bitcoin in the first place. Like, you have to stay naturally curious, and you have to be willing to, again, admit that you were wrong, to spend some time to educate yourself. It takes a certain type of person. What's funny too is I was having a conversation with a friend of mine in real life that I know from college. He's also a Bitcoiner, and I was telling him, I was like, yeah, you know, I've been really going down the rabbit hole lately. I've bought all these books. I bought the Bitcoin Standard. I've got a whole shelf full of books that I'm making my way through, trying to just learn more about it. And he was kind of like, why? Like, you're already buying Bitcoin. Why are you wasting your time reading the books? And I was kind of like, all right, I kind of see your point, because the at the end of the day, like, the logical conclusion is just stay humble, stack sats, right? So, do you really need to go learn all this about it if you're already at that level where I've already been through a bear market myself. Like, I've already seen it down. I've already come back
Like,
up.
you already know you're at maxi status, why keep reading?
It's like, I don't need to do it, but I am genuinely, again, it's a multifaceted thing. You get into ethical issues, morality, legality, governments, energy, technology, legislation. Like, there's so many different things that play into it that it is cool and exciting to, like, know your stuff, and that, because then it that just strengthens your conviction, right?
Yeah, because
That's
you're already not gonna sell tech, like the way that we say that, but you're already at maxi status. But I think the way that it's shaping so many aspects of our life, it's interesting to keep, because it's a passion, because it's so transformative, and because it's so inhuman in a way, because it's minus greed, it's actually a whole different thing we're not experiencing from the past. So it's such a unique entity in a way, like to be shaping our future. So like to be learning about the ways that it's doing that is something that I feel like it's going to be happening so quick that there's always going to be something to learn about it.
Oh yeah. Another point on education and adoption, right? So obviously every cycle, there's like a new generation of Bitcoiners that come in, they start to learn about it. You know, we do that a lot on X where you kind of put your, I'm Bitcoin class of 21, right? You put that on your page. Mm-hmm. And every new cycle, there is like new educational material, right? Mm-hmm. For people who are just getting into Bitcoin. And it gets mm-hmm. better as we iterate on it over time, it gets better and better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 10 years ago, if you were to try to explain Bitcoin to someone, it was still so new. The use cases were not, you know, it wasn't as broad. We didn't have ETFs and government level adoption, and cold storage technology was still in its early stages. It was a totally different educational playing ground. But now if you talk about it today, we can make it really simple for people. Mm-hmm. It's very easy for them to understand. Mm-hmm. And that's only going to get better, right? I imagine a world in a few decades, few generations, where children learn about Bitcoin in school, because we're already at the stage where, you know, your parents are paying for your groceries on the Lightning Network or the Lightning Extreme Network. So what is Bitcoin? What is the history of it? Why is it money? Like, the education is just going to get better as sort of the consensus around it and its sort of core principles gets reinforced, which, by the way, again, happens every 10 minutes. That's what mm-hmm. I like to tell people, is like every 10 minutes, the Bitcoin thesis just became marginally more verified and solidified. Mm-hmm. And that happens every 10 minutes without fail. The network has never missed a block, right? So every 10 minutes, this thesis of Bitcoin gets validated again and again, and it's stronger and stronger. So it is like a logical inevitability that this network and this protocol, right? I use that word sometimes. Bitcoin's a protocol. Mm-hmm. Is the future, and it's not going anywhere. So
I love it. That was a perfect, I think, way to end it. I could talk all day. And I feel like you and I had a lot to talk about. We could do, I feel like there's certain people that would be great to hear, but like there's more things I feel like we could have touched on. So if you ever want to be a recurring guest, I would love to have you on again.
Oh yeah. Well, this was so much fun for me. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you having me on. I think we had a really thought-provoking conversation. Mm-hmm. You definitely brought up some things that I haven't thought about before. And mm-hmm. yeah, I would, if you'll have me back, I would love to be back. Yes. I think it'd be great to get a couple faces in here. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, if you're looking for feedback, like a themed episode, like if we want to just talk about one specific topic, yeah. We covered a lot of stuff today, which is awesome. And I was yeah. really hoping we would. But if you ever just want to like, hey, I just want to talk about this today,
yeah,
this
that's element great.
Of it, right? Because then we can really go deep on yes. that in specific. Bitcoin, it's so connected with all these, every topic is so connected with every other topic mm-hmm. that you're naturally going to talk about a lot of different stuff.
If you ever want to reach out with anything you want to talk about, I would love it. I can't wait to share this with people. And you, I'm going to be posting your link down below so people know where awesome. To find you. And then we definitely have a lot more to talk about. So I'll be seeing you back again.
Yeah. If you'll have me back, I'd love to be here. Again, congrats on this podcast. You're doing great
Thank
stuff.
You. Thank you.
We'll see you in the shitposting world.
All yes, right. And congratulations on your first appearance in a podcast. So thank you for joining me.
All right. Have a great day. Right. Thanks so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.